Stay tuned to WBAP 820. We will bring you all of the late details from all available news sources at our disposal on this and other tragic occurrence, a tragic circumstance in American history. Earlier, from both the WBAP newsroom and NBC...
Gentlemen...
Yeah, we rejoin the network.
Silent morning in the United Nations for the President of the United States. This is Morgan Beatty, NBC Radio, New York. We have bulletins from Dallas. Governor John Connally of Texas underwent an operation for a gunshot wound in the chest at 1:30 p.m. Central Time today. Connally's condition, as we have indicated to you before, is serious, but... those close to him say that his doctor's report, the vital signs were good, meaning his vitality was strong and he could probably stand the operation. Doctors said Connally had a good pulse, his respiration is satisfactory. And now as to more vital facts, the statistics of death in Dallas, the assassination of President John Kennedy. The hospital report shows that the president lived about 30 minutes after the sniper cut him down, as his limousine left downtown Dallas. Newsmen said the shot that hit him was fired at 12:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. The hospital record now shows that the President of the United States died at approximately 1 p.m. Central Standard Time of a bullet wound clear through the head. Reaction, as you may know, is coming from throughout the world. The British cabinet, man by man, is receiving the reports of the president's death momentarily,
and our nation's
following
new president
very closely, especially the Prime Minister, who was Lord Hume, is just as you would expect it, shocked, stunned, and unbelieving, and yet it's true. We take you now for reaction in our capital to Robert McCormick, NBC News at the House of Representatives in Washington.
Never has the Congress of the United States been so stunned. The members of the Senate are walking around literally with glazed eyes. They scarcely speak to each other. They are in dazes, really. They seem to have no awareness, really, of what's going on. In the interval before the president's death was confirmed, they clustered around the ticker tapes in the lobby outside the Senate chamber. For every last word that came in, one or two of the secretaries moving around were already crying. But in the meantime, we do have some reaction. And to begin, here is Senate Republican leader Dirksen.
There are some things that are simply incredible and leave one absolutely speechless. This is one of them. I knew John Fitzgerald Kennedy as a representative, as a senator, and as a president for 14 years or more. And my last visit with him was on Tuesday morning of this week. I went early to present him with a turkey from the Turkey Growers Association. He was so amiable, so affable, so agreeable, and he looked in the very pink of condition, notwithstanding a rather rugged tour in the state of Florida. The thing that stuck in my mind most when suddenly he shouted to a lot of school children and to those managing this live turkey, don't take the turkey away until the children have had a chance to come up and see it. We visited about many things: politics, bills pending in Congress, the future, 1964, and everything that one can encompass within a half-hour visit. And suddenly comes this mortal blow that strikes him cold in death. I say it's an incredible thing. And my heart goes out to the family. And I'm a little bewildered by this turn of events, as I know the nation and the whole wide world will be. So first, my sincere sympathy to the entire Kennedy family. And in the language of the chaplain, as we had a prayer, in the hope that transfusion might infuse recovery, that the nation still stands and the nation will live.
And ladies and gentlemen, the tribute of Senator Dirksen of Illinois from Washington. And now we have urgent bulletins from Dallas again. We reported to you not too long ago that the report that a policeman had been shot in connection with the president's assassination, but we had no further at the moment. Now we have detail to a certain extent. A Secret Service agent and a Dallas policeman were shot and killed today some distance from the area where President Kennedy was assassinated. We have no more information on that, but from the Secret Service, Lieutenant Eric Kaminsky reports the assassin weapon appears to have been a high-powered Army or Japanese rifle of about 25 caliber. The rifle had a scope on it, the same kind of rifle, apparently, that Medgar Evers, the Negro leader, was shot with in Mississippi. The entire building, as we've noticed before, or told you before, this was a warehouse near the underpass where the president was traveling. But the entire building, this warehouse where the sniper was located, was evacuated sometime before the president passed by. People were working in the building, however, at the time of the shooting. Dallas Inspector, Police Inspector J.H. Sawyer says police found the remains of fried chicken and paper on the fifth floor of that building. Apparently, the person who had been there had been there quite a while. And after the fatal shots were fired, the stricken president's Secret Service, of course, the driver, raced away immediately to the hospital. And we have further reports at this time from Dallas to piece out this story as fast as we possibly can. One of the prime reporters on station WFAA, the NBC affiliate in Dallas, is standing by. Pierce Allman, WFAA, Dallas, will you please come in?
About 12:15 today, I and a couple of other people from the station decided to walk about four blocks north from our studios to greet the President of the United States as he came through Dallas on a motorcade. He had left Dallas Love Field. He had a warm reception there. He had caused some consternation to the Secret Service agents around him by leaving the yellow-marked guide lanes as he got off his jet and began greeting people who were standing alongside the wire fence at Dallas Love Field. Without incident, he got into his convertible, open top, and flanked by Secret Service men, began his ride through downtown Dallas. The reception was warm, it was enthusiastic, and as he came down Main Street on the way to the Stemmons Avenue Trademart, where he was to deliver an address sponsored by the Dallas Citizens Council, he turned the corner just before going under a triple underpass. I was standing at the corner of Elm Streets and Houston Streets here in Dallas, Texas. And as he turned, I couldn't help think to myself how vigorous, how healthy he looked. He was tanned. He seemed to be feeling good. He was waving to the crowd. I began applauding like the rest, and the man to my right and the woman to my left. She commented on Jackie's lovely dress. And suddenly we heard a reverberating explosion. My first thought was not to look at the president. I guess the thought that anybody would take a shot at the President of the United States didn't even go through my mind at the time. I rather looked around as if to say, well, someone has fireworks and it's in pretty poor taste at this moment. The President ducked. At least that's what it looked like to me. I thought this was a natural reaction. I didn't realize at the time that he had been shot and was slumping. There were three shots fired. They were spaced. They didn't seem to come from any automatic weapon of any kind. Rather careful and deliberate aim. A Secret Service man was killed. No one seemed galvanized into instant action. Everyone was rather stunned. And suddenly, the Lincoln convertible sped away at top speed, and guns appeared on everyone around. The police came around, flinging us to the ground, saying, hit the dirt. And they began not returning fire because of the crowd, but rather looking for someone at which to shoot. I ran, along with a few other people, over to the top of a knoll, which was just north of the site. It was about 20 feet. Everyone seemed to be running in that direction. Very foolish people, now that we look back on it. We couldn't see anything, though. There's a large building, about 7 or 8 stories, on the corner of Elm and Houston Streets. It's a Texas school book depository. It prides itself on being the largest in the state. It has several floors that are not used too often that stack dusty books. And how the Dallas police officers could do this. Well, evidently they could not successfully. We went into the Texas School Book Depository building, and immediately it was cordoned off by men with high-powered rifles and shotguns. They began searching the building, and first reports said they found direct evidence that the shots were fired from there. But at last reports, and this was just a few minutes ago, they are not certain which floor, if they were fired from this particular building. Supposedly it was Japanese ammunition. Anyway, the president, as he left the scene, was stretched out on the turtleback of this car, and he was holding Jackie, or I guess Jackie was holding him. It took him about 5 minutes to get to Parkland Hospital, and I didn't learn that he was dead until I got back here to the station. The reaction, I think, among the crowds who are now standing around streets in downtown Dallas, tuned into their radios, they're just standing around. Nobody's really saying much except it's just unbelievable. And why? And I guess we'll never know the answer to that.
From Moscow, the Soviet news agency TASS reports that the President of the United States was shot in Dallas, Texas, and died later. And it adds, an attempt was made on his life by persons believed to be among extreme right-wing elements. As usual, the Moscow reporters go off half-cocked and they make everything fit their social philosophy. They may turn out to be right, but that will be merely an accident because, as we have heard from Pierce Allman...
For later details, here is David Daniel, WBAP News.
Later report to Pierce Allman's report. In Dallas Crime Lab, Lieutenant J.C. Day just came out of that building with a British 303 rifle and a telescopic sight. It was found on the sixth floor at a corner window. There they found three empty 303 cartridge cases, scraps of chicken, as if a person had been there for some time, boxes of textbooks stacked up on three sides of the sniper's nest were found, and a gun rest made of papers near the open window. That building was the Texas School Depository at Elm in Houston in Dallas. Again, the 303 cartridge, the spent cartridges, and the 303 rifle have been found.
Now we return to NBC News.
Like Kennedy is like losing a father, because he's been like a father to everyone in this nation. It hurts everyone in this nation. I'm going to miss him very much. I don't know why they did it. Kennedy didn't do nothing to nobody on the contrary. He tried to help everybody in this home. For everybody. He tried to help as much as he can. I don't know why and how they could do anything like this to him.
Sir, what will it do to business?
Well, I don't think it'll affect business at all, sir. I believe that we had a great president who was doing a lot for business, and I believe that he set a trend that Americans will... I recognize and follow, and I think, if anything, it will help us become more dedicated to helping our businesses and helping our nation.
John. Due to the causes that he believed in.
Well, I believe the causes that President Kennedy believed in are the causes that all Americans believe in. Whether or not someone said they were a Kennedy man prior to this, I'm sure that we all join today in grieving for him and in recognizing that he had at his heart the hearts of all Americans, and that he was striving to accomplish for this nation what we all would want to.
All over the city, wherever there's a radio turned on, as of course we have had to keep our radio turned on to keep abreast of what is happening. With me now are people gathered around any such means of information.
Joe?
Yes.
Morgan Beatty, NBC News Central in New York. I think maybe it would be of interest to you to know, and to the people whose voices have just come to us from Trinity Church, that the Voice of America is carrying this broadcast around the world. So these people have made perhaps their first global broadcast, and they probably are totally unaware of it.
Well, I'm sure we're all grateful for that, not particularly, however, for the occasion. The feeling is mostly shock. People find it hard to put into words how they feel. They wander around looking stunned. They pick up a newspaper from the stand and look at it almost unseeingly. And then ask each other if it's true. And then people ask each other what's going to happen next. And like all of us, except for the fact that we have faith in our country, and nobody has any of those answers, Morgan.
Well, Joe, this is an appropriate moment with the bells of Trinity Church ringing at your back to transfer across the Atlantic and the Mediterranean to the headquarters of another church of another faith. We'd switch now to Irving R. BC News in Rome.
Shock and grief are the reactions in Italy, where President Kennedy was enormously popular. Italian President Segni immediately sent an aide to the American embassy to express his sympathy. President Segni called President Kennedy's death a great loss to humanity. Pope Paul is preparing a radiogram, which is expected to be ready within an hour. Italian radio and television made the announcement of the president's death and then went off the air except for solemn music. Cardinal Spellman and other American bishops in Rome for the Ecumenical Council expressed shock. Cardinal Spellman said that he is saying rosary for President Kennedy now. Irving R. Levine, NBC News, Rome.
Irving, will you stay on a few moments? Perhaps we will have more from you, but we do have urgent reports from Fort Worth, Texas. Soon after President Kennedy was assassinated today in Dallas, a white man in his mid-20s was arrested in the Riverside section of Fort Worth. Apparently, he is connected, by the police at least, with the shooting of a Dallas policeman. This is quite a mystery. A Secret Service man and a policeman, a Dallas policeman and a Washington Secret Service man, were shot some distance from where the assassination occurred of President Kennedy. We have not yet had word as to exactly what connection the shooting possibly in Fort Worth had. But this man who was arrested in Fort Worth was a man with black curly hair. He wore a red shirt. He said he was not connected with the assassination of the president. He told that to reporters. But he was urged on by the police. His hands were handcuffed, and he was taken to the Fort Worth City Jail. And now, Irving, a few more facts in detail from Dallas, if we may, at this point. President Kennedy's body was removed from Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas at 2.05 p.m. Central Standard Time. It was taken away in a long, green-colored ambulance with off-white curtains tightly drawn. Mrs. Kennedy rode in the passenger seat in the ambulance. That's the type of vehicle with two seats for passengers. She and the president's body were escorted from the emergency entrance of Parkland by two motorcycle officers. Mrs. Kennedy walked out of the back door of the emergency entrance as the body was taken out. She walked slowly. She looked around her in a dazed manner, and she appeared to be in a state of shock. Another announcement, White House Secretary Malcolm Kilduff said the president's body would be flown to Washington this afternoon, almost immediately. The Dallas Sheriff's Department says a rifle has been found in a staircase on the fifth floor of that warehouse building near the scene of the assassination. And now we have confirmation of exactly the kind of weapon. It was a 7.65 Mauser rifle. German-made army rifle had a telescopic sight with one shell left in the chamber. Three spent shells were found nearby. As you've noted before, we've had reports that there were either two or three shots. The police credit three shots with being fired, and incidentally, the third shot apparently struck Governor Connally of Texas because he was wounded in two places. One place is, of course, of no importance, but the wound in the back under the shoulder blade is the one for which Governor Connally of Texas is now being operated on. His condition is still serious, although his physicians feel that the vital points, his pulse, his reaction generally mean that he may well pull through. Irving?
Yes, Morgan.
Are you still on?
Yes, Morgan.
We thought perhaps maybe you had more reaction from Rome to give us, and we didn't know.
Yes, Morgan, I've just received a phone call from our cameraman who is on the Via Veneto, which, as you know, is the main tourist section of Rome, and he reports that there are American tourists there who are actually standing on the sidewalk looking at the newspapers and crying. We also have this word. The Italian state radio has likened President Kennedy's death to that of Abraham Lincoln. We expect to have the text of Pope Paul's message of sympathy in a very few minutes.
Well, that about clears us up there. Cardinal Spellman is now saying his rosaries for the President of the United States. Is the Ecumenical Council still in session at this moment?
No, Morgan. It's late at night here now, about 9:30 p.m. The council meets only in the morning. But several of the cardinals, the American cardinals who live at the North American College, where young American priests are trained, gathered the young seminarians together and joined in prayer.
Well, thank you, Irving, and please stand by. We're sorry to keep you up so late in Rome, but you, of course, understand the circumstances, and we'll be back with you later. And now we have another bulletin from Dallas. White House authorities report that the body of President Kennedy will arrive in Washington at 5:30 p.m. That would apparently mean at 5:30 p.m. Standard Time. It's now something after 2:30 p.m. Dallas time. I assume we can guess that the body will be flown back to Washington immediately, so that the episode in Dallas will be completed within a very brief period of time. We have no further police reports or Secret Service reports showing exactly what connection there is in the fatal shooting of a Dallas policeman and a Secret Service man, apparently in the area of Fort Worth, Texas. One white man has been arrested in connection with that. Apparently, the assassin of the President of the United States was a white man in his 30s. At least, such a man was seen near the place where the President was shot in Dallas about 12:30 p.m. this afternoon. Incidentally, if we may revive the scene for the moment to give you the exact placing in the presidential car of those who were closest to the chief executive when he was fatally shot. President Kennedy and Governor Connally of Texas and their wives had been riding together in the president's familiar dark blue bubble-top convertible. They were leaving downtown Dallas at the time the assassination occurred, near a triple culvert, and the shot that was fired at the president was fired from apparently the fifth floor of a warehouse by a 7.65 Mauser, that is a German army rifle. Apparently three shots were fired. One struck the president of the United States in the right temple and went cleanly through his head. The White House physician has said it was a simple case of a bullet going clear through a man's head. Incidentally, in the transparent plastic roof of the presidential car when the shooting occurred, that is, the plastic roof of the car had been removed from the motorcade so that the president was riding in an open car at the time. Secret Service agents riding with the president and in a second convertible following closely behind immediately drew pistols and automatic weapons, but there was no possibility of their firing at anybody with any effect without causing some kind of an accident. We have a bulletin from New York now. The League of New York Theaters announces that all Broadway theaters will be closed tonight. Willard Keith, spokesman for the League, says all League members' shows on the road also will be closed tonight in the beginning of the period of mourning for the death of the President of the United States. NBC News has learned that the military officers charged with arranging for state funerals are at the White House at this moment, discussing possible funeral plans. Mr. Kennedy is the first president to die in office under the new Defense Department setup, so protocol will have to be written as it is. That is, the idea of the military handling a funeral of the President of the United States is an entirely new one, and they will have to set precedents at this time. For those of you who may not know about it, one of the important facts of life in Washington is that the military is in charge of the District of Columbia in many ways. The Capitol building and so on is the only building there that's excluded from their direct charge, and they are indirectly in charge of that. So that it is entirely fitting, as was done a few years ago, that the Defense Department should handle affairs such as the one that we have regretfully and sadly before us, a funeral of another president of the United States. And this one, in the terrible tradition of Lincoln and McKinley. The Army will have charge, as usual, There are caissons and caissons and ceremonial horses at Fort Myer, Virginia, of course, along with units of troops ready for use in such capacities, so that Fort Myer will take charge of the funeral arrangements for President John Kennedy of the United States. And now more reaction from the Capitol. We switch now to NBC's Robert McCormick at the Capitol for reaction in the House of Representatives.
Actually, this is reaction from the Senate. One of the first members of Congress to get the bad news was one of President Kennedy's oldest friends, Senate Democratic Leader Mansfield. He turned pale when he heard the news, and then he and Dirksen together left the chamber to call the White House. Here is what Senator Mansfield had to tell us later.
The passing of John Fitzgerald Kennedy is not only a tragedy for the nation which he so ably represented, but is, I think, also a mark upon the respectability and the responsibility of some of our citizens. This good, this decent, this kindly man, this harassed man who had so much on his shoulders and received from some people so little in the way of support in return, this man is now gone to his reward. And I will miss him as a personal friend. The nation will miss him as a great president, and the world will miss him as a great leader. One of the fondest memories I can recall is the cooperation and the support which the distinguished senator from Illinois, Mr. Dirksen, the minority leader of the Senate, gave to the President of the United States, a Democrat, time and time again when the interests of the nation were at stake. And I know how grateful he was to you for the many contributions you made, and I'm just as grateful, and the nation is too. Words are useless to express one's true feelings at a moment like this.
Mike, a person's perplexity is just too great in a tragic moment like this.
That last voice was Senate Republican Leader Dirksen. Capitol officials have told us that they are making tentative arrangements for the body of the late President Kennedy to lie in state in the rotunda of the Capitol for the stipulated period of mourning so he can be viewed by the people of the country. The city of Washington, by the way, is packed with people in the streets, and they are concerned about rumors that something has happened to Vice President Johnson. The word we get here from Senate Democratic Leader Mansfield and others is that the Vice President Johnson, perhaps now president, we've not had word whether he's sworn in, is quite all right. Ironically, the chair of the Senate was occupied by the president's brother when the president was shot. Senator Edward Kennedy had been presiding over a rather dull session. A Richard Riedel, who mans one of the doors to the Senate lobby, brought the news into the Senate of what had happened and had the terrible job of telling Senator Kennedy that his brother had been shot. And here is Mr. Riedel's story.
Richard Riedel, to already given my name, press liaison, which means contact between the Washington correspondents, members of the press gallery, radio, television correspondents, White House news photographers, and the periodical press, with the senators on the floor, arranging appointments, asking them questions. In the 45 years I have been on the staff of the Senate, since September 27, 1918, when I was a 9-year-old boy and a page for 4 years, this is one of the hardest blows and one of the most moving, tragic experiences that I have ever known to sweep over the Senate. I may, if there's time later, mention when President Roosevelt died and President Truman, Vice President, then was presiding when the word of his death came. Well, the routine, the tickers in the lobby, AP and UP tickers, are read by senators and staff members for routine information. Phyllis Rock of the staff of Senator Morse of Oregon was in the lobby by herself reading the ticker. She turned to one of my assistants, Tom Pelican, who is with Senator Long of Missouri in his office part of the time, and said the president has been shot. Tom rushed out to tell me. I immediately went into the Senate chamber over to in front of the desk of Majority Leader Senator Mike Mansfield, raised my voice so that he and the senators, the surrounding desk, could hear, and said, "Senators, the president has been shot." It, of course, was like a shock wave, a jolt. I crossed the aisle to the Republican side, where Senator Dirksen was seated, and in the same manner told Senator Dirksen and the Republican senators who were at adjacent desks, with, of course, the same shocked reaction and stunned expression on their faces. I then happened to recall that a few moments before, the president's brother, Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, was presiding over the Senate. I turned and he was still occupying the chair. I knew that someone would have to inform him, and I thought I might as well. It was a very difficult job.
We now join David Daniel, WBAP Newsroom.
The Dallas Police Department today arrested a 24-year-old man, Lee H. Oswald, in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated. He was also being interrogated to see if he had any connection with the slaying of the president. Oswald was pulled screaming and yelling from the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas. He brandished a pistol, which officers took away from him after a scuffle. Police officer M.N. McDonald, who was cut across the face in the scuffle, quoted Oswald as saying after he was subdued, "Well, it's all over now." A large crowd had congregated around the theater and witnessed the arrest. Police had to hold the crowds back because many apparently connected the arrested man with the slaying of the president. The officer who was slain, J.D. Tippett, had been killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. Tippett had been slain with a pistol. Repeating, a 24-year-old man, Lee H. Oswald, has been arrested in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated. David Daniel, WBAP News.
We now return to NBC News.
Well, of course, that turns out now to be unnecessary because the president's body is being flown back to Washington and it's expected to arrive there at 5:30 p.m. And in that connection, we can report that President Johnson is expected to take the oath of office as President of the United States aboard an airliner before flying immediately back to the nation's capital. The entire Kennedy party, of course, is flying back immediately to Washington. And from Dallas, the mystery concerning exactly how and why this assassination occurred seems to increase rather than decrease with the passing of time and the gaining of more information. The Dallas Police Department has arrested a 24-year-old man, Lee H. Oswald, in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated. The man is also being interrogated to see if he had any connection with the slaying of the president. Oswald was pulled screaming and yelling from the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff area of Dallas. He brandished a pistol. Officers took it away from him after a scuffle. Police officer M.N. McDonald, who was cut across the face in the scuffle, quoted Oswald as saying after he was subdued, "Well, it's all over now." That may or may not mean anything in connection with the assassination of the president. A large crowd was congregated around the theater and witnessed the arrest. Police had to hold the crowds back because many apparently connected the arrested man with the slaying of the president and wanted to get at the man. The officer who was slain earlier was J.D. Tippett. He'd been killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. Tippit had been slain with a pistol. As you know, the assassination of the president was accomplished by a German Mauser 7.65 rifle. Robert Kennedy has left his Virginia estate, his Virginia home, for the airport to fly to Texas. But whether or not he was intercepted at the airport and told to remain in Washington, we do not know. And we also repeat to you that the identity of the assassin of President Kennedy, or assassins in case there were more than one, is not immediately known. We do know that he was shot from the fifth floor of a warehouse opposite the highway where the tragic event took place. Dr. Malcolm Perry, the attending surgeon at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, said when he arrived at the emergency room, "I noticed the president was in critical condition with the wound of the neck and head. When asked if possibly the wounds could have been made by two bullets, he said he did not know. He said immediate resumptive measures were taken, and Dr. Kemp Clark, chief of neurosurgery, was called along with several other members of the staff. Dr. Perry said they arrived immediately, but at this point the president's condition was critical and moribund, meaning that he was dying. A tracheotomy was performed to assist the president's breathing. The doctors said an oxygen machine was used and an electrocardiograph machine was attached to record any heartbeat. When asked to specify, Dr. Perry said the entrance wound was in the front of the head. Before, we'd been told it was from temple to temple. Well, of course, that could be in front of the head.
Eisenhower.
Former President Dwight Eisenhower today called the assassination of President Kennedy a despicable act. The former president, in a statement issued from his suite at a hotel in New York, said this: "I share the sense of shock and dismay that all Americans feel at the despicable act that resulted in the death of our nation's president. Mrs. Eisenhower and I also join with all other citizens in expressing our personal grief and prayerful concern to Mrs. Kennedy and all other members of the family." Take note of that one statement about our nation's president. Oftentimes, people confuse the person of the man in the White House with the office of the presidency. No doubt the assassins did that. They do not recognize, they could not, the terrible harm they're doing to 180 million people and the chief office of those people, not to a mere man named John F. Kennedy. Comment from Chief Justice Earl Warren. He says, "I was stunned and shocked to hear of the president's death." It's interesting to note that Chief Justice Warren had sworn President Kennedy in as the chief executive of our nation. And now more details on Moscow, the way the news has been broken to the people of Russia. Moscow radio broke into its home services news bulletin to tell Soviet listeners that President Kennedy had been shot. This was before the news of the president's death had reached Moscow through official channels. The home service in Moscow is a service beamed directly to all newspaper offices in the Russian republics, and it is relayed from there to various radio stations throughout Soviet Russia. From Stateline, Nevada, actor Peter Lawford, the president's brother-in-law, when told of the assassination, cried, "Oh, my God." He's married to the sister of President Kennedy. Incidentally, an employee of the Kennedy family notified Joseph B. Kennedy, the father of the president, and Mrs. Kennedy that their son had been shot. And they said not a word when they were told. And now let's see if we can get deeper into this great mystery that seems to surround a multiplicity of deaths and shootings surrounding this assassination. We've still not found out whether the arrest of a young man in Dallas in a theater with a pistol and the shooting of a policeman and a Secret Service man was connected with the assassination of the president. So for this report, we go to Dallas for a conversation with WFAA's Tom Perryman. Tom, are you there? Come in, Tom Perryman, station WFAA in Dallas, Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, a bulletin from Dallas. Lyndon B. Johnson was sworn in as President of the United States at about 1:38 p.m. Central Standard Time today. That was about 6 minutes ago. The oath was administered by United States District Judge Sarah T. Hughes. For the first time in the history of the United States, a woman official has sworn in a President of the United States. So now, apparently, Mr. Johnson will take another plane and fly immediately to the capital of the United States, where President Kennedy's body will be taken, and the planes are expected to arrive in Washington about 5:30 p.m. The Pentagon officials in charge, the military officials of the Pentagon, have already taken charge of funeral arrangements for President Kennedy. There will be a lying in state in the rotunda of the Capitol, as there has been in the case of all presidents and in the case of many prominent Americans, including the late Senator Robert Taft. The president will lie in state very near the place where Abraham Lincoln lay, where President McKinley, another victim of an assassin, lay after his assassination, and President MacArthur, who died before McKinley. President Kennedy becomes the fourth president of the United States who was assassinated in office. Another one was shot and wounded, President Teddy Roosevelt. And now for more on European reaction. We've already told you that Prime Minister Hume of Great Britain and several members of his cabinet have been informed of the death of the president. They've been kept in steady touch with the situation from the moment the shot was fired in Dallas to the death of the president and beyond. For reaction now of a more general nature, we take you to Kenneth Bernstein in London. Ken, are you there?
Yes, Morgan.
Would you give us European reaction and then let's discuss this matter?
Well, European reaction, as far as it's seen from London, ranges from the man on the street who is stunned to the Queen of England, who we may assume feels the same as the rest of us. The Queen was informed immediately as soon as the news was received. She is to issue an official statement to Buckingham Palace very soon. The Prime Minister, Sir Alice Douglas Hume, is driving back to London. He was at dinner 40 miles out of town. He left the dinner table and is coming back to London. We have an official statement from Downing Street, which says, Prime Minister has learned with the most profound shock and horror of the death by assassination of the President of the United States. The Prime Minister will have more to say later. He's going on radio and television later tonight, Morgan.
Incidentally, Ken, we will mix bulletins in with your report to us. We've just reported before that President Johnson had taken the oath of office. For the record, historically, he took the oath aboard the presidential plane at Dallas's Love Field while preparing to fly to Washington to take over the government of the United States. Incidentally, the oath he took is this one. It's one of the briefest oaths of office in any nation. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will do the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Incidentally, further details of the swearing-in were not immediately available, but we can presume in advance that President Johnson did not affirm, since he is a church affiliate and probably took the oath on the Bible. And now, will you come in again, Ken?
Yes, Morgan. I think an interesting indication of the impact of this news in Europe is the fact that the BBC, which is a very steady-going outfit, was completely unprepared for it and went to silence and complete despair, apparently. There was a minute of silence after the original bulletin, and then the announcer, almost stuttering, which is most unheard of on the BBC, said, "We will now have some soft music." And he did. And an hour after the original bulletin on BBC Radio, they were to begin a panel program, a lighthearted program called Any Questions, and the panelists announced that they had decided not to go ahead with the program in deference to the death of the president. And a member of the panel, Lord Boothby, who is a colorful Tory, got up and said, I have lived through two wars. I've had to live through some hard touches, including the deaths of friends. But the blow that has fallen tonight is for me the most shattering of all. I think that sums up the way an awful lot of people in Britain feel. Morgan, I went over to the Dover Castle, a pub near our office and near the BBC. They were very well informed because the BBC news staff were recalled from the pub. And the bartender said, this is terrible news. And a customer said, it's a disaster. And another customer came up to me and he started to speak and it looked as if he just didn't know what to say. But he looked at me so sadly as if, I'm so sorry.
Yes, and it's interesting to note here that a similar reaction in the Moscow radio, they were very hard put to get organized immediately. And after the announcement of the president's death, Moscow radio immediately began to play Russian funeral music. And they played it for some time. Western diplomats in Moscow were stunned. And all American Ambassador Foy D. Kohler could say, when told of the news, was, it's terrible, it's terrible, it's terrible. And we had a report before there was anything known of any assassination attempt or anything of the sort about former Vice President Richard Nixon. He had the great misfortune, and it is a misfortune, to make comment on politics, and of course he didn't know anything about any tragedy about to descend on the man in the White House or the fact that Lyndon Johnson would be elevated to the presidency, and as we've told you, President Johnson has already taken the oath of office at Love Field in Dallas, Texas, and probably by now is winging his way back to Washington, as is the president's body aboard either that plane or another. That detail has not been given to us as yet. But at Idlewild Airport today, long before any of these events, Mr. Nixon gave it as his opinion that Mr. Johnson was now a definite liability in Texas, where he was an asset before. He's probably a liability in the South, where he was an asset before, and it was Mr. Nixon's opinion, stated long before any of the tragedy was known, that Mr. Johnson would be dropped from the ticket in 1964. It all goes to show what great event in the twinkling of an eye, in a fraction of a second, can prove what a great historian has said at one time, that accidents make more history than anybody. And however intentional the assassination of the President of the United States was today, it was an accident of history. Incidentally, New York City has taken the usual precautions when an event of this kind occurs. Police Commissioner Michael Murphy, shortly after 3 p.m. today, sent an order to all precincts and commands throughout the city directing that all policemen in New York on duty today from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. be held in reserve until 8 o'clock tonight. The explanation of this is that the usual order has been issued in case of any unexpected reaction in the city to the assassination of President Kennedy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the coverage of this tragic circumstance in our history will continue on 820. This is WBAP 820 in Fort Worth. Stay tuned for latest news and information concerning the assassination of President Kennedy. It's 3 o'clock. WBAP 820, Fort Worth. This is WBAP 570, Fort Worth. As you heard a moment ago on 570, President Lyndon Johnson was sworn into the office of the presidency at 1:38 this afternoon. For more details on this tragic circumstance, here is David Daniel, WBAP News.
The Dallas Police Department today arrested a 24-year-old man, Lee H. Oswald, in connection with the slaying of a Dallas policeman shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated. He was also being interrogated to see if he had any connection with the slaying of the president. Oswald was pulled screaming and yelling from the Texas Theater in the Oak Cliff section of Dallas. He brandished a pistol, which officers took away from him after a scuffle. Police officer M.N. McDonald, who was cut across the face in the scuffle, quoted Oswald as saying after he was subdued, "Well, it's all over now." It's not known whether he referred to the president's assassination or merely his arrest. A large crowd had congregated around the theater and witnessed the arrest. Police had to hold the crowds back because many apparently connected the arrested man with the slaying of the president. The officer who was slain, J.D. Tippit, had been killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. Tippit had been slain with a pistol. Fort Worth police have arrested a white man in his early 20s with black curly hair in the Riverside section of Fort Worth in connection with the shooting of a Dallas policeman. The man denied any connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. He was handcuffed and taken to police headquarters. In Dallas, Crime Lab Lieutenant J.C. Day has come out of the building, the Texas Cool Depository at Elm and Houston in Dallas, presumably where the assassination took place, came out with a British .303 rifle. A network report said that the rifle was a German rifle rather than a British one, being a 7.65, but details on that event are not clear at this time. The rifle had a telescopic sight. It was found on the sixth floor in a corner window. They found also three empty cartridge cases, scraps of chicken, as if a person had been there for some time. Boxes of textbooks were stacked up on three sides of the sniper's nest, and a gun rest made of papers near the open window. That was at the Texas School Depository at Elm and Houston, where it's believed the assassin fired his fatal bullet at the president. President Kennedy's body was removed from Parkland Hospital at 2:05 this afternoon. It was carried off in an ambulance with curtains tightly drawn. Mrs. Kennedy rode in a passenger seat in the ambulance. She and the president's body were escorted from the emergency entrance by two motorcycle officers. The body is to be flown to Washington, D.C. immediately. Mrs. Kennedy appeared to be in a state of shock when she left the Dallas hospital with the president's body. She walked slowly, looking around in a dazed manner. Those who saw her enter the hospital earlier said she was not hysterical. Dr. Malcolm Perry, attendant surgeon at Parkland Hospital who attended President Kennedy, said when he arrived at the emergency room, he noticed the president was in critical condition with a wound of the neck and head. When asked if possibly the wounds could have been made by two bullets, he said he did not know. He said immediate resumptive measures were taken, and Dr. Kim Clark, chief of neurosurgery, was called along with several other members of the staff. He said they arrived immediately, but at this point, the president's condition was critical and moribund. A tracheotomy was performed to assist the president's breathing. The doctor said an oxygen machine was used, and blood and fluid also were administered. An electrocardiograph machine was attached to record any heartbeat. When asked to specify, Perry said the entrance wound was in the front of the head, and he might have meant it had gone in one temple and out the other. Six members of President Kennedy's cabinet were out of the country flying to Japan when the president was killed today. An hour and a half out of Honolulu, the secretaries were advised of the killing and immediately turned back. They were expected to speed back to Washington. The party was on the way to a meeting with members of the Japanese cabinet. In the party were Secretary of State Rusk, Secretary of Commerce Hodges, Secretary of Labor Wirtz, Secretary of the Interior Udall, and Secretary of Agriculture Freeman with their wives. The Securities and Exchange Commission asked an immediate halt today in over-the-counter trading in stocks. In a statement at 2:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Securities and Exchange Commission said, in view of the present emergency and the closing of the principal stock exchanges, the Commission requests that all broker-dealers cease over-the-counter trading. This is David Daniel reporting.
Thank you, David. WBAP 570 will continue in its search for details and reactions on the assassination of President Kennedy from all available news sources throughout the afternoon. We will continue with news now from ABC. Currently, you will hear Joel Krager and some of the reaction around the country to the death of the president. As you heard a moment ago, Lyndon B. Johnson has become the 37th president of the United States, with a swearing-in ceremony aboard the plane at Dallas Love Field at 1:38 this afternoon, 38 minutes after President Kennedy died. We will now join ABC News for all of the latest information. As information comes into the WBAP newsroom, we will interrupt the network to bring you late details of this tragedy. We now join ABC.
While official United Nations delegations were only moments behind the tragic developments, the average man in the street was rather bewildered by the fast-breaking news. An on-the-scene report now from Ted Koppel, ABC at the United Nations.
At the United Nations, as probably in every other part of New York, people are asking one another the question that begins with, is it true, and ends with a helpless shrug. Most of the people have not yet heard the final word. A surprising number have not yet heard at all. For the moment, everything is continuing as normal. Groups of school children and visitors from all over the world are waiting online for their tours to begin. One woman, who had heard of the president's assassination, said merely, I hate to think of what it'll mean. A man said quietly, just like Lincoln, he was shot because of slavery, too. At 3 o'clock, the General Assembly was scheduled to begin its session. At that time, the UN, like every other body in the world, may understand the first implications of what has really happened. This is Ted Koppel at the United Nations.
Expressions of sympathy pouring in. Pouring in from the big names of our nation, from the little people, from the down-to-earth, from the spiritual. And now these words from Norman Vincent Peale.
We were at our magazine Guidepost in Carmel, New York, when the shocking news came that the president had been shot. We have several hundred employees here. We immediately gathered them together and had prayers for the president and for the governor of Texas. This, of course, is a great shock to all of us. It's a great blow to our country, and all of us share in this grievous loss. From the human standpoint, we all thought of this wonderful young man who, at the height of his career, young and vital and full of life, should have been struck down in such a cruel manner. Our prayers also go to Mrs. Kennedy, who has suffered within the year, not only now the sudden loss of her husband, but the loss of her infant son as well. President Kennedy had made a great record. He had overcome the questionings of a certain period on the religious score. He was held in high esteem and regard by all of our people. And this is one of the greatest losses that has occurred to our country in many years. We extend our sympathy and our prayers to his family, and we pray for our country in this solemn hour of history.
On this most sorrowful day, a prayer from Norman Vincent Peale. A voice well known in the world of radio broadcasting, that of veteran commentator, reporter H.V. Kaltenborn, reached moments ago.
Here was a young man at the beginning of a great career who was launching into actions that would have affected the history of this country for many years to come. This is a sad day for the United States and, of course, for the world. We are fortunate in that in Johnson we have a man of capability, a man of sober judgment, a man who has had long experience in government, a man who will be responsible and responsive to the demands of the people.
And that was veteran radio reporter H.V. Kaltenborn. We're going to make an attempt again to reach Larry Newman, ABC's man on the scene at Hyannisport, for a reaction of the parents of the late president today. Larry Newman, ABC, Hyannisport.
President Kennedy's mother was in touch with the hospital when her son died. She was in the family home at Hyannisport, where preparations had been underway for days for the annual gathering of the Kennedy family for Thanksgiving next Thursday. The president's ailing father is also in the Hyannisport home here, but there has been no report that he has been told of the president's death. Ann Gargan, the president's cousin, was the first to hear the news of the assassination from a family chauffeur who heard the report over a Secret Service radio. State and Barnstable police immediately sealed off the Kennedy compound, and no one has entered or left the house since the announcement of the president's death. There is only one reaction here in Hyannisport, that of tremendous shock. Small children who knew the president were in the streets with tears in their eyes crying, "The president is dead." Larry Newman, ABC, Hyannisport.
Now for more news on the tragic assassination of President Kennedy, we switch to WBAP News, David Daniel reporting.
Fort Worth officers apprehended a late model green and white Ford this afternoon at 3408 East Belknap after a hot pursuit. They thought the driver of the car, a young white man, about 25, neatly dressed, was the suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy. However, Fort Worth Chief Roland Howerton says the man is not implicated. The Secret Service is en route from Dallas to Fort Worth to question the man, however, anyway. Officer W.D. Roberts and B.G. Whistler curbed the car after a high-speed chase when the car was reported racing toward Fort Worth from Grand Prairie. The car had been spotted by Tarrant County Sheriff Lon Evans. A tense moment ensued when the truck of the car was opened and Hercules explosives was found. A search revealed that the box contained only magazines. Sergeant R.D. Yaws and Detective J.D. Griffith opened the box. At the Fort Worth Police Station, Chief Roland Howerton told WBAP newsman Bill Seymour the man was not a suspect. And this is just late word. He said the man's description was turned to authorities by a Grand Prairie woman who told police the man pulled up to her, told her the president was shot in Dallas and drove off at a high rate of speed. The woman says she was not aware of the shooting, and so she was a little bit suspect of the car. She gave police the description, which resulted in the man's arrest, but that has not panned out. I think Mr. Whalen has something for us now. Dallas homicide detective Lavelle told WBAP newsman James Kerr in Dallas a few minutes ago that they have little doubt that 24-year-old Lee Oswald of Dallas is...
I believe he's from Fort Worth on a later thought, but they're not uncertain on that, David.
He might be from Fort Worth. 24-year-old Lee Oswald, tentatively from Dallas, maybe from Fort Worth, is the man who shot and killed Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit shortly after President Kennedy was shot this afternoon. Oswald was pulled screaming and shouting from the Texas Theater by officers who had gone there on a tip that Oswald was there. He brandished a pistol, which officers took away from him after a scuffle. Oswald was quoted as saying, "It's all over now." A large crowd had congregated around the theater, and police had to hold the crowds back because they were of the impression he was the president's assassin. Officer Tipper had been killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. The coincidence in the case is that Oswald worked as a stockman at the Texas Book Depository, the building from which the sniper shot President Kennedy. Dallas police have declined to say whether they think Oswald is connected with the assassination of President Kennedy. And that's our late report now.
And now we switch again to ABC News for more reaction to the tragic news, the death of our president. Speaking is ABC News Director James Haggerty.
A rifle bullet in Dallas is going to have profound effect throughout the world. The burdens, of course, on the new president, Lyndon Johnson, are tremendous. But I am confident that President Johnson has been kept fully informed of the affairs of the United States. He is a member of the National Security Council and works closely with the president. Ever since 1945, when Mr. Roosevelt died, As you might remember, President Truman did not know anything about the atomic bomb until he became President of the United States and was briefed on this by the then Secretary of Defense. In the terms of President Eisenhower and the brief term of President Kennedy, this has been a thing of the past. And the two vice presidents since that time, Vice President Nixon and Vice President Johnson, have worked very closely with the president, are statutory members of the National Security Council, and as such are fully acquainted with the great affairs of the United States, particularly those in the field of foreign affairs and military strategy, defense of our country. I knew President Kennedy quite well as a senator and then as a president, and his death today is just a tremendous shock, not only to our people here, but all over the world. He is a man that was respected. Many people might have disagreed with some of the things that he was doing, but he was deeply respected, not only here, but overseas. And his assassination today was just an impossible thing that couldn't happen, but did happen.
Mr. Hagerty, while you were news secretary for years with former President Eisenhower, you knew the late president when he was then a senator. What was he like as an individual?
He's a very warm human being. He's, if you use the vernacular, a regular guy. I don't know anybody who knew him personally who disliked him. You just couldn't. He was a gentleman. He was a fine man, and a man that I think everybody respected, although politically or domestically some might have disagreed. But you had to respect President Kennedy, and I think the country did too.
How was he regarded when he was in the Senate by his colleagues there?
Well, as far as I know, and I did not remain in my Washington job. I wasn't in too close a touch with the members of the Senate, but from what I have heard, his colleagues and associates in the Senate speak of him, I think he was regarded very highly.
You being in the White House scene for some years, does a president live in fear of assassination?
No, I think, and the only one that I can speak of firsthand was President Eisenhower. But I'm sure that the same applied to Presidents Roosevelt, Truman, Kennedy, and every other president that we have. They are constantly protected. They get to be quite a fatalist about their own personal safety. They are quite fearless about their own personal safety. Whenever a president travels, for example, like this trip to Dallas, there is always an advance Secret Service detail that goes to the city in question that works on security measures with the local police, the sheriff's office, the state police, and a line of march is drawn up. I've been in many motorcades, particularly in large cities, while when you can protect on the streets, there is absolutely no way you can protect. And that was in Tehran, when President Eisenhower visited the Shah of Iran. But that was right after the communists had threatened to kill the Shah. And they turned out the whole army there. And every single window of every single apartment house where the motorcade passed was guarded by a soldier or a militiaman or a policeman. But that was the only time. And I have heard many people, security people, as they drive through a town with these large skyscrapers, just sort of shake their heads, particularly when the president is in an open car. There is a great deal of obvious force around the president that has that deters screwballs and crackpots. One other thing that might be of interest with the exception of the attempt made in 1950 by the Cubans on the life of President Truman. And this attempt, the only other person that ever fired at a president that knew anything about firearms was John Wilkes Booth. Everybody else fired a gun for the first time, a pistol, at a president. Now, this was a rifle. It was from a window. The carry of the bullet from the facts and figures that I have, that bullet carried 200 yards. Now, this had to be a planned conspiracy, a deliberate planned conspiracy, and a man at the other end of that rifle with the telescopic lens that could shoot. But this is only the second time in our history, and it's only the first time in our history that a rifle has ever been used in an attempt to assassinate or to assassinate a president. So it has to be a very carefully planned conspiracy, a shocking conspiracy, but that's the way it looks to me.
You possibly answered some of the question I'm about to ask you, Mr. Haggerty, but as the former White House news secretary, the question is going to come up, why is the president permitted to ride in an open automobile? Why does he not travel in a bulletproof automobile? My second question to that will be, do you think that the Secret Service surrounding the president in his car, do you think their number are sufficient?
Well, let's take the first one first. Yes, I think their number is sufficient, augmented by local police, sheriffs, and state police. And you need to put on a strong show of force, which is what they have done. So I think that part is correct and justified. And indeed, the Secret Service haven't been reformed at the beginning of this century, or just at the end of the last century, when the American people got pretty sick and tired of having their president shot at. One out of every four presidents up till the turn of this century was shot at in one form or another, primarily by crackpots. Since the Secret Service was formed, other presidents have been shot at. But President Kennedy, regretfully, is the only one that has been killed.
Now for more news on the tragic assassination of the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, we switch to WBAP News and David Daniel.
Rather, I'm sorry, the port.
This is Tom Whalen reporting for WBAP News. A repeat of the story plus more details, Dallas homicide detective Lavelle told WBAP newsman James Kerr in Dallas just a few minutes ago, they have little doubt that 24-year-old Lee Oswald of Dallas is a man who shot and killed Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit shortly after President Kennedy was shot this afternoon. Oswald was pulled screaming and shouting from the Texas Theater in Dallas by officers who had gone there on a tip that Oswald was there. He brandished a pistol, which officers took away from him following a scuffle. Oswald was quoted as saying, "It's all over now." A large crowd had congregated around the theater, and police had to hold back the crowds because they were of the impression that Oswald was the assassin of President Kennedy. Officer Tippit had been killed by a man answering the description of Oswald in the neighborhood a short time before. Now, the coincidence in the case is that Oswald worked as a stockman at the Texas Book Depository. Now, that's the building from which the sniper shot President Kennedy in Dallas. Dallas police have declined to say, though, whether or not they think right now Oswald is a suspect for the actual assassination of President Kennedy. He was identified originally from Dallas as Lee Harvey Oswald, then from Fort Worth. Now, on November the 1st, 1959, Oswald told the United States Embassy in Moscow that he had applied for Soviet citizenship. He said he had been a tourist in Russia since October 13th that year. Oswald is reported to have a Russian wife. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram confirmed that the man held in Dallas is the same Oswald and said his mother is being taken to Dallas police headquarters at the present time to see him. This bulletin from the WBAP newsroom.
Now back to ABC Radio.
He has to be completely fatalistic and fearless about his own personal safety, and he believes any president believes that when he goes into an area, that if people turn out and are waiting on the street to see him go by, he's going to be in a position where they can see him. And any amount of argument that you might have with any of presidents is not going to be successful in that line, Don. It's just the way they feel. And I'm sure President Kennedy felt just exactly the way President Eisenhower felt. And I know that there were many times when we asked the President Eisenhower to use the closed car, not of any particular danger because of bad weather or cold weather or anything. And he said, look, the people came out to see me, and I'm going to see them. So it's just a perfectly natural reaction of a man who is the chief executive of our country, who is elected by the majority of the people of our country, and they just built that way, or they wouldn't be where they are. They believe this firmly, and there isn't anything that can be done about that part of it.
President Kennedy, assassinated today, Vice President Lyndon Johnson immediately becomes the president. He has been sworn in. President Johnson now flying back from Dallas. Will there be any other changes necessary at the White House as a result of President Johnson taking over?
Well, I would assume that with a new president now, that the members of the cabinet would automatically at least tender their resignation so that he could then make a choice of his own cabinet. Whether there will be any changes in that or not, only time alone will see. In his White House staff, yes, I would assume that there would be changes, at least after a while. A president has to have his own people, and people that he is used to working with around him. This was the same, the recent illustration, or comparatively recent illustration, was on the death of President Roosevelt when President Truman succeeded to the presidency. And the whole White House staff volunteered their efforts, and a lot of them stayed on for a period of transition. Then, gradually, Mr. Truman, at that time, brought in to the White House staff, which is really just the personal staff of the president, his own people, people that he had worked with, that he liked, that he could trust. Not that he didn't trust the others, but they were used to working with him. And
they knew his routine.
They knew his routine and the way he acts and reacts. And I would think in time that the new President Johnson would have a new staff in the White House, or at least partially. But again, I don't think anything like this is going to happen right now. There is a sort of suspended state of shock at the present time. And eventually, I think that there would have to be some changes.
Who now assumes the title of vice president?
Well, there won't be any. And under the Constitution, the line of succession, the second man now is the Speaker of the House. The third man becomes the President pro tem of the Senate. And then the line of succession is the cabinet in order of seniority with the Secretary of State as the fourth man, and I believe the Secretary of Defense is the fifth, and so on down through the 10 cabinet offices. Again, unless my memory is faulty, there will not be any vice president as such. You would have to need an election for that. And that office will sort of remain vacant now with maybe an acting presiding officer of the Senate. But I think the next vice president will be elected in 1964 at the general elections.
Thank you, James Hagerty, former news secretary in the White House under the administration of Dwight D. Eisenhower, a vice president of the American Broadcasting Company.
You're listening to WBAP 570 in Fort Worth. We are canceling our regular programs in order to keep you informed on developments on the tragic death of our President John F. Kennedy. Here are some important announcements. These football games have been canceled.
Arlington and Irving, scheduled to be played in Arlington, has been canceled. Sam Houston Bell game, scheduled to be played in Hearst, has been canceled. The Eastern Hills Arlington Heights game, scheduled for tonight at Farrington Field, has been postponed until next Wednesday night at Farrington Field. The Brewer Diamond Hill game, scheduled for tonight at Hanley Field, has been rescheduled for tomorrow night at Hanley Field. The Glenn Miller concert, originally scheduled for this evening, has been canceled. The concert will be rescheduled at a time and date to be announced later. All homecoming activities at TCU have been canceled for tonight. In respect to our beloved president, Leonard's department store has been closed for the rest of today. Two requiem services have been scheduled for 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. Saturday at All Saints Episcopal Church. And prayer services are scheduled at the University Christian Church tonight at 8. Dr. Granville Walker, pastor of the University Christian Church, delivered the benediction this morning at the President's Breakfast at Hotel Texas. Now back to ABC News.
In Washington, the Speaker of the House, John McCormack, has just held a news conference. Now we switch you to Pete Clapper, ABC, Washington.
House Speaker McCormack has just held his first news conference since the president's death. The speaker said he will go to Andrews Air Force Base to meet the plane carrying the remains of the late President Kennedy. Also going to Andrews to meet the body will be House Majority Leader Albert and House Majority Whip Boggs, as well as Mrs. McCormack, the speaker's wife. At this news conference, Speaker McCormack refused to discuss his new status as the first in line for the presidency after the new President Johnson. Speaker McCormack said he didn't want to think about it. Tears were in the speaker's eyes. He sniffled and spoke very slowly and quietly, his lips trembling. He reminisced, said that John Kennedy looked ahead, was a man of keen vision. Speaker McCormack then spoke over the telephone to House Minority Leader Halleck. I heard Halleck say, "This is a terrible day for the country." Speaker McCormack replied, "It is indeed." Pete Clapper, ABC, Capitol Hill.
Observations by the Speaker of the House, John McCormack, in Washington. Observations also by the former Speaker of the House, Republican Joe Martin of Massachusetts. For Mr. Martin's comments, we take you to Washington.
I couldn't believe it when the first news came, and I kept hoping that it would not be true. Unfortunately, it is. The nation has lost a leader at a time when it could ill afford to lose a leader. Not that I mean by that, not only a leader in their domestic affairs, but in our foreign affairs in particular. We've lost a man we sorely needed, and there's but one hope for our country, and that is for all of us to join, regardless of party affiliation, in order to carry the country through this crisis.
Congressman Joe Martin, Republican of Massachusetts, and observations on the assassination of President Kennedy today. On our overseas circuit now, we have our man in Moscow, ABC's Sam Jaffe. Sam, when did word of the president's assassination reach Moscow? A break in our circuit to Moscow. I'll wait just a moment and repeat my question to Sam. We have him on the line right at the moment on our overseas circuit. And I would like to ask Sam Jaffe in Moscow some questions. Once again, Sam, can you hear me, Sam?
Yes, I can.
Sam, what time did Moscow receive the word of the president's assassination?
Well, I'd say roughly, Martin, about an hour ago.
How was it?
About an hour ago. Martin Page of the London Express and I were sitting in at a dinner party with a Soviet official when the word came on television, on Moscow television. We couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. I'm telling you. It sort of broke up. I still do not believe the president is dead. And, yes?
Unfortunately, Sam, it is true. It has been officially announced. Moscow has got to believe it. It is true.
Well, I'll tell you, we did not believe it, and our friend from the Soviet official did not believe it either. There was dead silence. We were having a dinner party in honor of his grandmother. We just could not believe it. And we rushed to the American Embassy, where there was extreme confusion. Telephones were ringing at the Marine desk. Ambassador Kohler, I must say, was not available for comment, nor was any other official of the American Embassy. Yet, I understand a Martin Page, my friend who was with me at the dinner party from the London Express, will report this, has now, just a few minutes ago, word from Gromyko, the Soviet foreign minister who reported this. We were absolutely shocked. We rushed back to my apartment, where I have a TASS machine, a TASS wire service machine in English, which reported the following. It has been officially announced that the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, has died in hospital after an attempt was made on his life by persons, as believed, from among the extreme right-wing elements, period. Stop. That is from TASS, the Soviet news agency, which added the following. TASS, Moscow radio and television, stopped their transmissions about 23 hours local time, that is Moscow time, to announce the mournful news, and I'm reading from the TASS dispatch, from New York, about the attempt on the life of the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy. The announcement was repeated several times, then funeral marches were played over the radio and television network, period, end of item, end of story. Now, we went back to my office, and several members of the Brazilian embassy came down, and they said that they were shocked at this news. They could not believe it. These were members of the Brazilian embassy. And just a few seconds ago, when we arrived here, we talked to one Russian, and he said, yes, I had heard that the president is dead. And he said, I think the world needs him.
Thank you, Sam Jaffe. Thank you, Sam Jaffe in Moscow.
Now, can you hold? Yeah.
I have some additional word here in the ABC newsroom in New York. A top Treasury official in Washington says that no Secret Service men were injured in the attack on the president today. The Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, under which the Secret Service operates, says a report was received that a Dallas policeman had been killed by the fusillade fired by the assassin. He said, I believe that report is correct. Now, it has been reported from Dallas that a policeman was killed as he tried to take into custody a suspected person accused of the complicity in the assassination attempt at a Dallas movie theater. That policeman was shot by the suspect. As he grappled with him, another policeman was able to subdue him and take him to the station house for questioning. A first report had indicated that there was a Secret Service man involved in that killing of the policeman. The Secret Service in Washington says that did not happen. That scene where the policeman in Dallas was killed occurred some distance from where the president was assassinated today. And General John Gerhart, the commander of North American Defense, has just denied any earlier reports that the command has been placed on an alert. There had been reports to that effect earlier. It now is definitely denied that the Strategic Air Command is not on any other than the normal alert, which does take place at all times. President Kennedy is dead. Our nation is saddened. We have more reports coming up from throughout the world. This is ABC Radio. Let us take a 5-second pause for station identification.
This is WBAP 570, Fort Worth.
May I repeat some of the horrible news that has occurred today? President Kennedy assassinated this afternoon on the streets of Dallas, Texas. A rifle bullet crashed into the president as he rode in his bubble-top limousine, the top down. In a motorcade preparatory to making a luncheon speech at the Dallas Trademark. The attack on the president happened at 1:25 Eastern Standard Time this afternoon. A little over 3 hours ago, the president rushed immediately to Parkland Hospital in Dallas. There, surgeons attempted to try to preserve his life, but apparently from word we've received from the hospital, the doctor said it was obvious they could not save the dying president.
priests were called in to give the last rites of the Roman Catholic Church shortly after the president was carried into the hospital. Of course, you know, Mr. Kennedy was the nation's first Catholic president. And the first word we received on the fate of the president came when the priests came out of the emergency room and said, "The president is dead." It was not official. We could not believe it. We didn't want to believe it. But later word confirmed it. The official word came from Washington that President John F. Kennedy had died. He died about 35 minutes after the rifle bullets were fired into his body. At 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time this afternoon, Mrs. Kennedy, while riding in the same car with the president, was not hurt. Texas Governor John Connally also was shot in the attack on the president. He suffered a bullet wound in the chest. Doctors immediately tried to save, to operate and protect the Texas governor. We have not received any additional word on the Texas governor. Mrs. Connally also was traveling in that car with the president and the Texas governor. Both wives immediately saw to their husbands and tried to comfort them as the Secret Service immediately drove the presidential party to the hospital. Vice President Johnson and Mrs. Johnson were not traveling in the same car, but several cars behind the president's limousine. The vice president was not injured. Shortly after the president was officially pronounced dead, Mr. Johnson and his wife left the hospital, went to the airport, and there aboard the presidential plane standing at the airport, Lyndon Johnson was sworn in as President of the United States, the 37th president, sworn in by a federal judge, Sarah Hughes, a woman judge in Dallas, Texas, who had been appointed by President Kennedy. Seized in Dallas, Lee H. Oswald, identified as chairman of a Fair Play for Cuba committee. He's the prime suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy. Lee H. Oswald, identified as chairman of the Fair Play for Cuba committee. He's the man that was picked up in the Dallas movie theater and in which one policeman lost his life. Another policeman was able to take him into custody. On the fifth floor of a building overlooking the area where the president was assassinated, Dallas police and U.S. Secret Service men found a foreign rifle, a German Mauser, a 7.65 caliber. Three spent cartridges lay on the floor next to where that rifle was. One bullet still in the chamber. Three bullets tore into the presidential limousine. The Dallas police said that it apparently seemed as though the man who had made the attack on the president's life, the person who had made that attack, had been there for some time. They found the remains of a chicken dinner and various papers lying all around. Now under arrest, Lee H. Oswald. He calls himself chairman of the Fair Play for Cuba committee. He's the prime suspect in the assassination of President Kennedy. He's now under arrest. He returned to his Fort Worth, Texas home from Russia last year. He was in the Soviet Union since 1959. He spent his time in Russia working in a factory in Minsk. He left only after he apparently became disillusioned with life under the communist rule. Oswald had gone to Russia after his discharge from the U.S. Marines. He said at that time that he wanted to remain in Russia. He had a change of heart and applied for a passport in the fall of 1962, saying he wanted to return to the United States with a Russian wife that he met and married in the Soviet Union. They have a baby. The passport was issued. Soviet authorities granted him exit permits, both for him and his family. It was in 1959, after he had defected to the Soviet Union, that Oswald told American embassy officials there that he had applied for Soviet citizenship. Under arrest today, accused of the assassination of President Kennedy, Lee H. Oswald. in Dallas, Texas. The president lies dead. Mrs. Kennedy returning with the body of her husband aboard the presidential plane. With President Lyndon Johnson, they arrive at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington a little after 6 o'clock, about an hour and 10 minutes from now. ABC will be on the scene at that time. In the meantime, some observations on today from the national editor of ABC Radio News, Walter Porges.
Thank you, Don. Just a few words to give our listeners an idea of what they can expect on the ABC radio network this evening in connection with this horrible tragedy that has struck the nation and the world today. Very shortly, we hope to be able to present live from St. Patrick's Cathedral in here in New York a memorial program, tribute to President Kennedy. Then, as Don Gardner mentioned, we will bring you live from Andrews Air Force Base in Washington the arrival of Air Force One, the big jet, carrying President Kennedy's body back to the nation's capital. This evening, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, roughly 3 hours from now, the ABC Radio Network will present a one-hour tribute to President John F. Kennedy. Immediately following that, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the ABC Radio Network will present a one-hour memorial concert in tribute to our late president. Now here again is Don Gardner.
There's been some late news announced at the White House. Let us find out what it is. We take you to Bob Fleming, ABC in Washington.
Lyndon B. Johnson will make his first trip to the White House as President of the United States within the next 2 hours. The plane in which he took his oath of office as he left Dallas is also bringing back to Washington the body of John F. Kennedy. There is no word here at the White House whether the new president will remain overnight. Mr. Kennedy's body will be taken to Bethesda Naval Hospital, we're told. His brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, will be in charge of the funeral arrangements. Mrs. Kennedy is also on the presidential plane returning from Dallas. It is probable now that she will be the one that will break the news of her husband's death to their two children. Caroline and John Jr. have not been told. They are here in the White House in the care of their nurse, Maud Shaw. Outside the White House, the crowd still stand. The word has not yet reached them for certain that the new president, Lyndon Johnson, will come here, but the word is that he may. And in part of this sympathy and understanding, they stand silently waiting and watching. Bob Fleming, ABC, the White House.
Also in Washington today, Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota held a news conference. Mr. Senator Humphrey had visited the White House. And I would like to ask Senator Humphrey, what was the mood there?
Well, of course, the mood there is the mood of the country, the terrible sense of shock, tragedy, and personal loss, heartache. There isn't very much that one can say except that what irony that this should happen in the United States. A country that is dedicated to law and order. A country that believes in the dignity of the individual. And yet, an assassin takes the life of our president. I've said to others, and I say to you, that not only has the world lost a very fine and great man and great leader, and the nation lost a great president, but I personally feel a very keen loss of something moving out of one's life. And I can't help too but think personally of the family of our departed president. Mrs. Kennedy, who lost her baby, now her husband. These are very, very difficult and tragic moments.
Is it possible, Senator, for you to comment on what the change and the presidency will mean as far as our foreign domestic policies are concerned?
I don't believe that one can comment upon that except to say that the president President Kennedy had a very close working relationship with President Johnson. And I would hope that the whole nation and the whole world would be reassured that the basic policies of our foreign policy would be maintained, and of our security and of our domestic policy.
Could you tell us of your last meeting with President Kennedy?
Yes, I remember vividly. It was just Wednesday morning. It was a very happy meeting, a very friendly meeting. In fact, we walked together from the breakfast table back to the president's private office. We were talking about the Congress, the bills that were before the Congress, talking about his trip. It was just a very personal, friendly visit. I don't know if ever there can be any more friendly and cordial relationship than was maintained by the president with those of us that were privileged to know him.
What would you look for to happen tonight when President Johnson returns to Washington?
Well, of course, President Johnson is an extremely able man. He's experienced in government. He's been a close working partner with President Kennedy. I know that he will be able to take over the reins of government with firm hands, competent hands, and he'll have the prayers of every American, and I think of the most of the world, because the whole world looks to the United States, and when they look to the United States, they look to the White House and to whomever is there. So I would expect that the Vice President who now is the President, would move right into a position of responsible leadership and calmly and assuredly take hold of the reins of government. That's the way I would see it.
Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota, speaking after he had made a visit to the White House today and also with some observations on the future and President Lyndon Johnson. While, of course, no plans have definitely been announced, the president's family, Mr. Kennedy's family, are the ones who will determine exactly the preparations for the funeral. It would be a normal assumption that the president's body will be taken to Capitol Hill, there placed in the great rotunda under the dome of the Capitol, to lie in state. It has always been normal for a president who dies in office to lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda. It's also probable, because of the president's deep attachment to his home area of Boston, Massachusetts, that the funeral services will be held there. It will be a full dress affair to honor Mr. Kennedy and his role as the leader of the nation.
You're listening to WBAP 570 in Fort Worth. We have canceled our regular programs in order to keep you informed on developments concerning the assassination of President of the United States, John F. Kennedy. There are several announcements of interest to Fort Worth, Dallas area residents. At 6 o'clock this evening, Requiem Mass will be conducted at St. Thomas Episcopal Church, 6525 Inwood Road in Dallas. Two Requiem services have been scheduled for the All Saints Episcopal Church on Saturday at 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. Here's a statement from Raymond E. Buck, President of the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce. The President's visit to Fort Worth was rewarding to him and to the First Lady and to the hundreds of thousands of Fort Worth citizens who honored and admired him. We deplore the tragedy which has occurred, and we are asking that the merchants and business enterprises in Fort Worth close for the rest of the day in honor and grief of this calamity. And as a result, we have received these announcements that the Fort Worth downtown stores are closing and will be closed through the rest of the day.
This information comes from Mr. F.W. Lawbaum of the Downtown Fort Worth Association. Halton's Jewelers will be closed today, will not be open this evening as earlier announced. Leonard's Department Store is closed for the rest of the day. All homecoming activities at TCU have been canceled for tonight. The Glenn Miller concert, originally scheduled for this evening, has been canceled. The concert will be rescheduled at a time and date to be announced. The Bowie Theater will be closed tonight. Many football games scheduled for tonight have been canceled and are to be replayed later, will be rescheduled later, and we'll have complete information on that later. WBAP 570 in Fort Worth. Now back to Don Gardner, ABC News.
This scene is probably what is being duplicated 1,000 times over from one end of our nation to another. Businessmen gathered in the streets in silence. Silence reigned in the homes of the humble. News of President Kennedy's wounding was heard in stunned belief. And then the shock of the announcement of his death. Then a feeling of hatred and disgust. Throughout the length and breadth of the land, courts, administrative buildings, judges, lawyers, court attachés, gathered in little groups. In office buildings, secretaries and bosses looked at each other and stared in disbelief. They were shocked and saddened. On the radio, over the television, they'd heard the news. In hospitals throughout the land, the patients tuned in. The sudden news from Dallas came like a surgical shock. Doctors and nurses had to hurry to many a bedside to administer a sedative. In restaurants throughout the nation, the news broke amidst the luncheon hour chatter. Stilled all conversation. Gloom fell on the tables. Some people got up from the table, walked away. Others sat there in silence. The president is dead. ABC's Quincy Howe had a chat this afternoon with a former president of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Quincy?
I wasn't the only one in that chat, Don. Over at the Waldorf Astoria, General Eisenhower had prepared a brief statement for the press, radio, television, and so on. His office handed this to the press, and then a number of us reporters had gathered in a corridor on the 8th floor of the Waldorf, where the general is staying at the moment, and he came down and instead of reading his statement, he said, maybe you'd like to have me just say it as I recall it, improvise it, and then he let us ask him a few questions. Here is part of that interview with former President Eisenhower.
General Eisenhower, will the nation be all right in a few months ahead?
Oh, I'm not going to predict anything of that. I just say this. The American nation is a people of great common sense.
Hey, watch
and
out.
They are not going to be stampeded or bewildered.
Hey, General, how in history has have assassinations affected the political course of events?
Well, of course, in Lincoln's assassination, presidency went to a man who was a registered Democrat, Mr. Johnson. In Garfield, I doubt that there was any. And, of course, McKinley, that brought in Theodore Roosevelt. Of course, there have been other attempts in late years. Mr. Truman was at a grave threat to his life, and Mr. Roosevelt, just before he was inaugurated, you remember, down into when Mayor Cermak was killed, ran a very grave risk. These things have happened, and it seems inexplicable to me, because Americans are loyal, and it's just this occasional
psychopathic sort of accident that occurs, and I don't know what we can do about it.
Could you say anything, General, about how people will feel abroad from all your experience with the United Nations and others? How will it be taken abroad?
Well, I think they will be a bit bewildered. This, in the civilized countries of the world, this doesn't happen so often. And you remember in the starting of World War I, the murder of the Archduke Ferdinand, I think his name was. Why, this itself almost, well, it's one of the contributory causes to that war. And, but here, I just don't know what happens. And it, but we are a nation that where our freedoms are allowed, or are observed in such a way that everybody is ready to, I mean, everybody is, you might say, capable of doing this if he's ready to put his own life on the line.
General, how will you spend the rest of today and tomorrow? How will you spend the rest of today and then tomorrow and into the weekend?
Okay. I expect, I have canceled the dinner date that I had for tonight. Tomorrow, I'm going immediately to my home, and if I'm wanted for any purpose whatsoever, I will, of course, be available.
Would you have any advice for the American people at this time?
No, as I said, I know the American people will stand solid, and they will not be stampeded.
Thank you, Mr.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night, Another former president has a room at the Waldorf, and from President Hoover's office came a brief statement in which he said, among other things, "I am shocked and grieved to learn of President Kennedy's assassination. He loved America and has given his life for his country." That was what former President Hoover had to say about the death of President Kennedy today. This is Quincy Howe in New York.
From Dallas, Texas, we've received some information that gives some of the observations by Mrs. John Connolly, wife of the wounded Texas governor, who was also in that first car with President Kennedy today when the president was assassinated. Mrs. Connolly said that Mrs. Kennedy turned to her husband just before the fatal shots fired out. Mrs. Kennedy said, "Well, you can't say Dallas wasn't friendly to you." An ironic statement. Mrs. Connolly said that Mrs. Kennedy turned to her husband, made the remark as they rode past the cheering crowds in Dallas before the assassination attempt. Mrs. Kennedy at the time was wearing a pink wool suit and matching pink pillbox hat. She had a bunch of yellow roses with her as she rode in the open-top White House limousine. They'd been presented to Mrs. Kennedy at the Dallas airport. Those roses were lying on the blood-spattered car outside the hospital as her husband lay dying inside. When the attack came on the president, Mrs. Kennedy clutched her husband to her as he slumped forward in the seat of the car. She knelt on the floor over him during the ride to the hospital, and she helped lift her dying husband onto a stretcher at the hospital. Then she went inside the hospital. She naturally was stunned as she entered the hospital. The doctors attending the president said that they did not take any time to notice whether Mrs. Kennedy or any members of the White House staff were with the president at the very moment when he died. Members of the White House party said that naturally Mrs. Kennedy's first thought was then to be with her children, Caroline 6, John Jr. He'll be 3 just next week. As we heard from the White House just a little while ago, the children have not been informed yet. It'll be Mrs. Kennedy's sad duty to tell them of the loss of their father when she returns shortly, within the hour, to the White House. Mrs. Kennedy, the body of the late president, and President Lyndon Johnson and Mrs. Johnson, now flying back aboard the presidential plane to Washington. They are due to land at Andrews Air Force Base in about 55 minutes from now. From Mexico City, we learn a customs official says the U.S.-Mexican border was sealed immediately after the assassination today of President Kennedy. The order closing the frontier issued by U.S. authorities an hour and 12 minutes ago. Overseas in Holland, radio bulletins heard in greatest shock. The news given at once to Queen Juliana. "My God," said a spokesman at the Netherlands Foreign Office, "how could such a thing have happened?" In Britain,
As ABC's Bill Sheehan reported to us, they are deeply shocked at the death of President Kennedy. And Bill Sheehan told us of these reactions from persons in the downtown streets of London. From a lawyer, he said, "I can't believe it. It's the worst thing that could happen." He was a great friend of this country. And from a British secretary, in disbelief, "No, no, it can't be true. Who would possibly want to do it?" And for more around the world, here is ABC's Bernard Kaplan reporting from Paris.
The news of President Kennedy's assassination came at 7:50 Paris time, too late for the evening newspapers here, as most Frenchmen were sitting down to their dinner. President de Gaulle, who only a few hours before had said farewell to the visiting West German Chancellor Erhard, who had been due to see Mr. Kennedy next week in Washington, got the stunning news from an aide-de-camp at the Elysee Palace as he and Madame de Gaulle, as is their custom, were about to switch on the nighttime news bulletin. De Gaulle, a man who during the past 3 years has himself escaped two assassination attempts unscratched, is said to have been as badly shaken by the news as his aides have ever seen him. His immediate comment was, "President Kennedy died like a soldier under fire for his duty and in the service of his country. In the name of the French people, a friend always of the American people, I salute this great example and this great memory." The American president's death, in the view of NATO officials here, could convulse the international situation. So many recent developments, they believe, have been predicated on Mr. Kennedy's prestige and personality. Bernard Kaplan, ABC, Paris.
And here in the ABC Radio News studios in New York, a thought concerning the assassination of the president today. Dr. David H.C. Reed, minister of the Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Dr. Reed.
For most of us, words don't come easily at a time of shock and horror. And today's tragedy has left only one word on people's lips: unbelievable. And yet it has happened. And we must face the loss together with something of the courage and the confidence that President Kennedy himself possessed. In our bewilderment, we can only pray that this hideous deed may awaken the conscience of us all to the terrible consequences of hatred and fanaticism. The Protestant community feels today an even deeper shock and sense of personal loss, since just 2 weeks ago the President was our guest here in New York at a dinner of the Protestant Council. And as we mourn him now, shattered by this fearful news, we would surround his family with our prayers and affection and commend the nation to our God in Christian confidence and hope.
Thank you, Dr. Reed, the minister of the Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City, Dr. David H.C. Reed. We received word from Dallas, Texas, that Governor John Connally, who was wounded by the assassin who shot and fatally wounded President Kennedy, Texas Governor John Connally reported to be now in satisfactory condition at the Parkland Memorial Hospital. The doctors operated on Texas Governor John Connally for a bullet wound of the chest. Here is the chronology of what happened to President Kennedy today. At 8:45 this morning, the president, walking bareheaded and without a coat through a misty rain, crossed a parking lot across the street from the Fort Worth Hotel, Texas. He spoke there to a cheering throng of Democrats who could not get tickets to see him at a breakfast appearance, apologized because Mrs. Kennedy was not with him. Said the president, "She's organizing herself. It takes them a little longer." And as the president said, "They always look a bit nicer." At 9 o'clock, 15 minutes later, the President and Mrs. Kennedy attended the breakfast in the Hotel Texas. It was sponsored by the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce. Mrs. Kennedy did arrive some minutes after the President. Her entrance, though, brought a tremendous applause from the 2,500 guests as they stood up in honor of Mrs. Jacqueline Kennedy. They were presented Texas boots, President given a Texas hat. He declined to put it on in public, joking that he would wear it at the White House come next Monday. At 10:35 this morning, the President and Mrs. Kennedy left the Texas Hotel. They went by car for Carswell Air Force Base, just outside of Fort Worth, and a short flight over to Dallas. At 11:37 this morning, the presidential plane landed at Dallas's Love Field. Mrs. Kennedy emerged from the plane smiling, shaking hands with the airport greeters. That moment, she was carrying a bouquet of roses. Young men in the crowd shouted to her, "Hey, Jackie," and they tried to squeeze forward for a closer look at the attractive lady. Several young girls screaming over Mr. Kennedy as he made his way through the crowd. No sign there, any anti-Kennedy statement. They left a motorcade that was to take them over an 11-mile route, including downtown Dallas. Then at about 12:25 p.m. Dallas time, the motorcade approached a triple underpass which feeds into the Stemmons Expressway, the five-lane route to the Dallas trademark where Mr. Kennedy was to make a luncheon speech. A series of rifle shots, three of them, ran out. The president fell face down in the back seat of his car, a bullet in his head. Governor John Connally of Texas slumped at his side, wounded in the back. Mrs. Kennedy grasped her husband's head and she gasped, "Oh, no." The motorcade immediately, on orders of the Secret Service, raced to Parkland Hospital near the trademark. Mr. Kennedy taken into the emergency ward. There, the doctors did what they could. He received blood transfusions and the extreme unction from two Catholic priests. At 1 p.m., 35 minutes after the bullets were fired, President Kennedy was pronounced dead. His body now on board the White House plane with Mrs. Kennedy and President Johnson, who was sworn in at the Dallas airport, now winging their way sadly back to the nation's capital, due to arrive at Andrews Air Force Base in about 45 minutes. A late report from the White House. We take you to Irv Chapman, ABC, Washington.
Here at the White House, it's been made known that the late president's body will lie in repose in the East Room of the White House.
All day tomorrow for viewing by...
Okay.
Here at the White House, it's been made known that the late president's body will lie in repose in the East Room of the White House for viewing by members of his family starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and other government officials through the rest of the day. In addition, the first White House appointments have been made and announced for President Johnson for this evening. Tomorrow, the president's family, President Kennedy's family, will view the body in the East Room at 10 a.m. At 11, President Johnson, the Speaker, ex-presidents, members of the executive branch holding presidential appointments will file past. In the afternoon at 2, the Supreme Court and members of the federal judiciary. At 2:30, members of the Senate and House, governors of the 50 states and territories. At 5, the diplomatic corps. At this moment, President Johnson is in the air en route to Washington. We are informed he will make a statement on his arrival at Andrews Air Force Base outside the capital city in something like an hour from now. It has been determined that the cabinet will not be at the airport to meet him, but at the White House, when he arrives here, he will meet almost immediately with Defense Secretary McNamara and with McGeorge Bundy, presidential aide for national security affairs. At 8 tonight, President Johnson will meet with bipartisan leadership of the Congress. Presidential Assistant News Secretary Andrew Hatcher made these announcements in a very emotional atmosphere in the White House press room a few moments ago. Meanwhile, the city is preparing to be a capital in mourning. Radio stations are announcing school closings. Theatrical performances will not be put on. And the city prepares to remain in a state of dignity and calm as a new president arrives and takes office here. This is Irv Chapman, ABC at the White House.
And in connection with the closings and various announcements, I might add that in New York City, shortly after it was known that the president had been shot this afternoon, all of the financial community closed up. The New York Stock Exchange, the American Exchange, the over-the-counter markets, and all of the financial community stopped operations. Here is Joe Sabia, speaking for ABC in Boston.
The news that shook the entire world on this November 22nd, 1963, was received with double emphasis here in Boston. But this was the city that John Fitzgerald Kennedy called home. He was the personal friend of many Bostonians. People here knew him as president, as senator, as United States congressman, and as Jack, one of their neighbors. When the first announcement of this horrendous tragedy reached Boston, the city seemed to freeze. One citizen stopped another to ask dazedly, is it true? Is the president really dead? And even when the word was made official, they continued to question one another in disbelief. Local officials who knew the president in their political capacities were just as dumbstruck as was the man on the street. Newsmen could get little more than stammers and sobs from usually talkative public figures. Chapels and churches have suddenly filled up throughout the city. Men and women are crying open tears in the streets. Like the rest of the nation and the world, Boston is numb with shock and grief. We've lost a great man and a great leader, and a dearly beloved native son.
Joe Sabia, ABC Boston, reporting on reaction in the president's hometown. Numbness and shock is what we all felt, but though we hated to believe it, the word traveled fast. ABC's Bob Lindley reports from South America and Buenos Aires.
The reaction to the assassination here could hardly be more profound. I saw a woman nearly faint when she read the news on the bulletin board of a newspaper. In the downtown area, policemen are blowing their whistles to try to keep the traffic moving, but in vain. Crowds discussing the president's death make moving on the sidewalk impossible. On learning of the assassination, Buenos Aires' two powerful newspapers, La Prensa and La Nación, blew the sirens they use only for the greatest catastrophes or developments. The last time they blew the sirens was at the death of Pope John XXIII earlier this year. High government officials are already meeting to discuss what this means for the future of Argentina and of Latin America. Bob Lindley, ABC, Buenos Aires.
Bob Lindley reporting from Buenos Aires on reaction to the president's assassination in South America. One of the men who would have been a possible opponent of President Kennedy next year, depending on the decision of the Republican convention in San Francisco, Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York State. Governor Rockefeller.
This is a shocking and terrible tragedy for the nation and the world. Mrs. Rockefeller and I join with all New Yorkers and every American in extending heartfelt sympathy to Mrs. Kennedy and the President's family. May God grant strength and guidance to Lyndon Johnson as he assumes his grave responsibilities under these tragic circumstances. The prayers of all of us will be with him. I proclaim for the state of New York a 30-day period of mourning, and I have directed that all state offices shall be closed on the day of the president's funeral.
New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller and his observations and shock, disbelief at the president's assassination today. How about some observations from another man of the ABC News team? We take you now to Chicago and Paul Harvey.
Good evening, Americans. We are just never ready for this kind of thing in this country. We deplore the hotheads elsewhere in the world who change governments with guns, but we try to ignore the fact that now four of our own presidents have been cut down by assassins. It had been such a tremendous welcome at the Dallas airport and all along the parade route that Mrs. Kennedy, who had become perhaps his greatest political asset, turned to her husband and said, "You can't say Dallas wasn't friendly to you." Moments later, in the back seat of that open car, she cradled her husband's bleeding head in her arms, saying, "Oh, no, oh, no." Top speed, it was still 5 minutes to Parkland Hospital. Mrs. Kennedy did not collapse, no hysteria. When she entered the hospital, her chic fuchsia suit was covered with her husband's blood. President Kennedy, within 30 minutes, was dead from a bullet in his brain. There was another wound in the president's neck, which could have been from the same bullet. Mrs. Kennedy's wish was to return to Washington immediately to be with the children. The bullets, by now you know, came from a warehouse window. On the fifth floor, police found the remains of some fried chicken and some paper. The assassin had waited there for some time. And a Mauser rifle with a scope sight. Three cartridges fired, one still in the chamber. Dallas policemen advised that a suspect had entered a theater in the Riverside section, chased him there. There was a shootout. One policeman was killed. The suspect was captured, Lee H. Oswald, 24. They dragged him from the theater screaming. Evidence is piling up against him. He was employed in the building where the murder weapon was found. Lee H. Oswald traveled in Russia in 1959, married a Russian woman, renounced his American citizenship, tried to apply for Russian citizenship. And it's significant to me that Moscow Radio today hastened to say that our president had been killed by extreme right-wing elements. Now it develops the assassin's allegiance was red. He wore a brown shirt, uniform of a Castro communist terrorist, and he, Lee Oswald, is chairman of the pro-Castro outfit called the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Governor Connolly, with a bullet through his back that came out his chest, fractured his wrist, underwent surgery. He is conscious, condition good. Vice President Johnson, who was riding in a separate car a considerable distance behind Kennedy's, was unhurt. Lyndon Johnson is now President of the United States. Within less than 2 hours of the president's death, aboard the presidential plane in Dallas, Johnson took the oath of office sworn in by a woman judge and then took off with the widow and the body for Washington. When the first news came today, before it was even confirmed that the president had been killed, a flood of sell orders hit the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. They rang the bell, closed down for the day, but before they could, industrials had plummeted $21. And the commodity exchanges closed down, and Congress recessed, and sporting events most everywhere scheduled for tonight are canceled. Pope Paul, advised, went to his private chapel to pray. General Douglas MacArthur, in a telegram to Mrs. Kennedy tonight, said, quote, "I realize the utter futility of words at such a time, but as a former comrade in arms, his death kills something within me." The president's special car has a bulletproof bubble glass top, but the top was down today so that he could wave to the enthusiastic crowds. The Dallas reception was the most enthusiastic of any stop in Texas. For weeks, a big debate raged over who of the city's luminaries would get to sit at the head table this noon. Nobody did. And on the president's White House desk tonight are the calls and the callers and the documents and the urgent things to be done which could not possibly await his attention for another day. But they will wait now. It is for us that one must grieve tonight. For a generation which has so refined its intellect that it can split atoms and communicate with the moon, and yet remains at the mercy of its own undisciplined emotions. If the world is one day destroyed, it'll come just like this, you know. It'll not be the H-bomb that did it. It'll be the greed or the fear or the hate that set it off. Paul Harvey, good night.
ABC, Chicago.
President Kennedy's plane, the plane bearing the president's body, has just landed at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington. We take you now to Dick Bate, ABC, Andrews Air Force Base.
Presidential jet has now landed. A truck arrangement has pulled up to the side of it. The back door of the jet is open, and it would appear that they are now pulling out the casket of ex-President Kennedy. It is a bronze casket. It is off the plane now, accompanied by Secret Service men. It is on a truck, the body of which rises up in the air on a hydraulic lift. This truck has been lifted up to the side of the plane, the back door of the plane. The bronze casket has been pulled off the plane. It is now on the bed of the truck. And the body of President Kennedy is back in Washington. Ambulance carrying the casket has gone on into the city, and President Johnson is now before the microphones for his first public statement as President of the United States.
This is a sad time for all people. We have suffered a loss that cannot be waived. For me, it is a deep personal tragedy. I know that the world shares the sorrow that Mrs. Kennedy and her family bear. I will do my best. That is all I can do.